Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 4, The Leaky Cauldron.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? We're gonna have a problem here.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Real Weird Sisters. I'm Martha.
And I'm Alice.
And today we are here to talk about Chapter 4 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Alice, how's it going this week?
It's going well. I've just been enjoying getting into Prisoner of Azkaban, but yeah, it's a slower start than I was hoping for, but I've been enjoying it. How about you?
Yeah, I was actually about to say the same thing, that I've kind of been a little bit underwhelmed with how the pace has been going. I mean, it's all been really fun chapters and interesting stuff, but I'm definitely excited to get to Hogwarts, get to having, you know, Defense Against the Dark Arts with Lupin, and things like that are, I think, my favorite parts of this book.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's still overall been definitely a faster and more, like, more engaging read than Chamber of Secrets, but I guess that's just the nature of the beast when we're going through these one week at a time.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of our own doing.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, normally if we were reading this at our own pace, not just like a weekly chapter by chapter reading, we probably would be done with the first four chapters really fast and then be at Hogwarts in no time.
Yeah, I mean, it's good because, like, this is really letting me dive deeper into the chapters, and I mean, I think that's the point. Like, we're really getting to know these chapters a lot more at an expert level versus just kind of skimming through them to get to the exciting stuff.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, I agree. Yeah, so before we get to the chapter, I just wanted to do a little housekeeping. Earlier this week, we set up a survey for our listeners. It's located on our website, realweirdsisters.com/feedback. And that's just a little Google form that you can fill out just to get some feedback on the show, see how we're doing. We're still a relatively new show, and we want to continue to improve, make sure that we're making our listeners happy. So if you have 5 minutes out of your day to go ahead and fill out that survey, we'd really appreciate it, and we'll do our best to definitely try to respond to what you say in that poll. Well, that being said, are you ready to jump into this chapter?
Sure.
So this chapter begins, Harry's at the Leaky Cauldron. The end of the previous chapter was him arriving at the Leaky Cauldron on the night bus, meeting Fudge, and this is just a couple days later. It says he's taken him several days to settle in, and he's been really enjoying kind of that independent living, which is pretty cool to be on your own as a 13-year-old.
I remember back when I read this when I was a child, just thinking, like, wow, that sounds like the most awesome week of your entire life.
Totally. Yeah, I, like, also kind of, like, imagined that this was what it was like to be 13, because I know when you turned 13, I was always, like, wow, she is so old. you got your ears pierced, you got contacts, you got your braces on.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah.
But I just remember I, like, thought that 13 was, like, the coolest age, and of course Harry being 13 here just added to that.
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of a lot of freedom for him. He's not allowed to leave Diagon Alley, but there's a lot to do in Diagon Alley, and it says that Harry has, like, no temptation to leave.
I know, and I'm like, I'm surprised that he's, like, has enough focus to be doing homework while he's living on his own. I guess, like, I do understand, I am a nerd, so I, like, am more inclined to do homework than Harry probably is normally, but, I mean, when you're in a situation where you don't really have, where you're by yourself and you're, like, you don't really have anything else to do, but, I mean, like, I don't think Harry's gonna want to be shopping all the time, so I can see why he'd want to be doing homework.
Yeah. I mean, it says that he had to, exercise some real self-restraint because he's really tempted to buy. And the stuff he's tempted to buy kind of super cracks me up.
Like, yeah.
He's tempted to buy a set of solid gold gobstones. And, like, since when has Harry been into gobstones?
I know. Well, gobstones honestly sounds like the lamest game to me. It's like,
okay, it's kind of funny, like, in this chapter we actually dive a little bit into what gobstones is.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds more intriguing than it has in the past. Like, I always pictured it kind of like stamp collecting or something.
Yeah. Well, my main memory of gobstones is in the fifth book when Umbridge does whichever educational decree, mm-hmm. and all organizations are disbanded, and there's some, like, first years who are like, will the Gobstones Club be canceled? And it's, like, such a, like, little kid and, like, nerdy thing to do. I mean, not that I should be frowning upon that kind of behavior, but...
Yeah, but it does... So, just in case people don't remember, it says that Gobstones is a wizarding game rather like marbles. So, okay, that's where it sounds a little boring. But then it says that the stones squirt a nasty-smelling liquid into the other player's face when they lose a point.
Sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, that could get in your eyes.
I guess you just have to know when to blink.
That's where I wear. That's why I wear glasses.
Little protective eye goggles.
Yeah, for when I play Gobstones.
Yeah, that's a. Maybe you have to wear goggles when you play.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't really. I don't think Harry plays Gobstones that much. He plays Wizard Chess.
Yeah, that's why it's like so ridiculous that he's intrigued by, like, really wants to buy the solid gold Gobstones.
It's so dumb because it's like you're buying gold with gold, like. Yeah, I'm sure that solid gold.
Does your normal gold squirt some nasty smelling liquid into your opponent's face?
What a benefit. I wonder if Fred and George, well, George now, could do some, RIP.
That took a depressing turn.
I wonder if George could do some sort of prank line with the Gobstones as like the base, you know, something like a stink bomb, some sort of thing.
Wow, Martha, let's hire you out as a consultant to the Weasley's Wizard Wheezes.
Yeah, last week I was gonna, I was trying to apply to be a love poem writer. This week I'm applying myself to the joke shop industry. Maybe neither of those really are a great career path for me. Another thing that Harry also is interested in spending a bunch of money on is a perfect moving model of the galaxy in a large glass ball, which he thinks would make him make it so that he would never have to take astronomy again.
I know, I'm like, just because you have a model doesn't mean that you, like, suddenly know everything there is to know about astronomy.
I know, I'm like, it'd be one thing if, it, like, I don't know, taught him. Like, it's just a model. It doesn't, like...
Yeah, and it's like, why is he so into the model when he's clearly never been into astronomy?
Yeah, like, he doesn't want to go to astronomy class. Why would he want a perfect moving model of the galaxy in a large glass ball?
Yeah.
Interesting that it's the galaxy, though. So it must be pretty big that it says large glass ball.
Not just the solar system.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I'm always interested in exactly, well, not that interested, but I'm interested what exactly astronomy is for wizards.
Right. So I always kind of pictured it like they were kind of doing some, like, almost like divination, kind of how the centaurs look at the planets.
Like astrology?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of had that image, too.
So I guess that would be
too.
More of astrology, but...
Yeah, I think... I mean, they're always doing, like, star charts and stuff. Right. So I think it's more about the stars than about the planets.
I guess they're looking up at the stars and charting where they normally are, and then maybe they can read things about based on that.
Probably. I think that's probably a podcast for another day. The actual thing that Harry's tempted to buy that's actually cool, or at least actually, like, makes sense for Harry to want, is the Firebolt, of course, which is... pretty cool.
Yeah, so the Firebolt has just come out, and I always thought it was kind of funny that, I mean, and people have pointed this out, I'm not the first person, but, like, the first book, the Nimbus 2000, is, like, brand new.
Yeah.
Then the second book, the Nimbus 2001, comes out.
Uh-huh.
And then in this book, the Firebolt comes out, and then, like, the Firebolt is just, like, immortal. Like,
right.
Immortally the best broomstick you could have.
Yeah. And there's no Nimbus 2002 or 3. Yeah, it's pretty funny. The Firebolt, I'm kind of surprised that they didn't, like, you know, that's a new name for a broomstick, because that seems like a pretty, it's not that original sounding to me.
Well, Martha, this was the 90s.
Oh, that's right.
This isn't taking place today.
Yeah.
This was in a previous century.
That's true. Yeah, it was, like, before I was born.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this is taking place in, like, 1993, so that is before your time, Martha.
I know, I'm so young. But...
Oh, yeah, you're a baby.
The life in Diagon Alley for Harry sounds pretty cool. He gets a free Sunday every half hour, which I wouldn't
I know,
say no to.
I know, and this is the scene that has always made me love Florian Fortescue.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it made me particularly sad when he goes missing in the sixth book, because, like, I feel like this really set him up as, like, this sweet old man who's just, like, has a good heart.
Yeah, I just like the idea of, like, an old man who runs an ice cream parlor, and
not
only that, but the fact that he's giving Harry free ice cream obviously makes him a winner as well.
Yeah, but then it's kind of funny because he always really stood out to me, but if you take the Sporkle quiz of the top 200 characters in Harry Potter, he's not even in the top 200.
I know I've taken that probably more times than is normal, but I think that is a name that I try out a lot.
Yeah, and he surprising. Seems like he sticks in my head so much. I think it's partially his name and, like, the alliteration.
Yeah.
But...
Well, and this is just a really nice moment with him, and like we've mentioned, this is something that J.K. Rowling does really well, is kind of creating an emotional connection with somebody who's not even really a character.
Yeah, true. One of her best skills.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, he has a couple mentions in this book, a couple mentions in the sixth book. He might be in, like, the first book. Oh, yeah, when Hagrid gets the, like, raspberry ice cream with chocolate and nuts.
But... So, it surprises me he's not in the top 200, but...
Yeah. Anyway, Harry's been having a pretty good week on his own. I think probably the least fun part is when he has to go shopping for all his school supplies. Did you always like school supply shopping, Alice?
Oh, I love school supply shopping. Are you kidding?
I know you do.
You don't?
It's fine.
Okay, so I used to... Well, it's probably because I used to always take our dad to go school supply shopping.
Money bags.
When I was in middle school, elementary and middle school, I would always say, like, it's time for school supply shopping. Like, Dad, will you take me? Then he would take me school supply shopping, and he would always just buy, like, the name brand of everything and would just, like, load up the cart with all these supplies. And then our mom found out kind of what was going on. And so then she switched and made it so in the future he wasn't allowed to take us school supply shopping. So you probably only mostly went with Mom.
So you had, like, the 5 or 6 years of Dad taking you.
And then Mom started making us do an inventory of all of the school supplies we already
had. Yeah, so that's what was lame, is that I always had to use your old broken up crayons. And then the new ones that I got to buy were Rose Art. So
I just remember
not
Mom,
even worth it.
Like, putting together a bag of used crayons.
Yes, and I'd say, Mom, I can't take that to school. I'll be the laughing stock of the class. Which I probably did actually use that phrase as a second grader, right?
Oh, totally. Martha always talks like a book out, or a character out of a book.
So I was very, like, embarrassed to have to take a big bag of broken crayons that were yours. And then so Mom would be like, well, if you want to buy a new box, you can buy a box of Rose Art crayons. I would say, oh no, I will just take the broken ones. At least they're Crayola.
Poor ungrateful thing.
Well, okay, but you were just talking about how much you love school supply shopping. Of course it wasn't that much fun for me when all I got to really buy was Rose Art. Clearly we're not looking for a Rose Art sponsorship on this podcast.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be getting it at this rate.
But yeah, so Harry's doing school supply shopping. I think the flourish and plot scene is a little weird. The manager...
Oh, it cracks me up.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I just feel like the manager is a little bit snoopy.
Yeah, so, well, it's really funny to me when Harry's, like, trying... He comes in and the manager... The part that cracks me up is when the manager thinks that Harry needs the Monster Book of Monsters, so he just, like, starts... He, like, braces himself, like, goes over to the cage, is, like, about to pull the monster... Like, he just is super fast about it. He's like, get out of the way! Brushing Harry aside, puts on the gloves, and goes over to the cage, and then Harry's like, oh, I already have one of those, and then the manager's, like, so relieved.
Yeah. Well, okay, it's just a little bit weird that he thinks that everybody going to Hogwarts needs the Monster Book of Monsters, because, I mean, not that many people take care of magical creatures, right?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's maybe one of the easier, like, electives, but it's just, yeah, I guess it wouldn't be everyone, but I would say maybe, like, at least half of the 3rd through 7th years.
Sure, well, probably 3rd through 5th years, and then probably not that many people take it for the root.
That's true.
But yeah, I just thought it was kind of interesting how he just doesn't even ask Harry if he needs it.
That's true. It's a little bit of an oversight, I think.
But yeah, and then he's like, it takes a really long time for Harry to buy his books, right?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of goes through, like, every single one, and Harry, he's like, like you're saying, the manager is kind of prying. He's like, oh, you're taking divination, are you? He starts being all weird about it.
It's funny because, like, I'm pretty sure Harry doesn't even really know what classes he's taken, or he's taking, because when he signed up for electives at the end of last year, he just signed up for whatever Ron signed up. Yeah. I almost just called Ron Rob. That's really embarrassing. but yeah, so I don't think Harry really has much to add to the divination conversation.
Yeah, but this is when he sees the Grim and, like, realizes for the first time that it's, like, a death omen.
Right, because he sees this book that's called Death Omens.
What to do when you know the worst is coming.
Right. He doesn't even, like, open the book because the manager tells him not to.
Yeah. Which, honestly, I've always been able to very much relate to the idea of what the manager says. He said, I wouldn't read that if I were you. You'll start seeing death omens everywhere. And that is very me, like, that, I am such a hypochondriac.
You sure are.
So, I definitely should never look at a book of death omens.
No, I would not want to be around for the day that you read a book about death omens.
I'd be freaking out.
You would be like, oh, my coffee is in a weird shape at the bottom of my mug. I think it's the Grim. It would not be good.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, so I'm glad that that kind of thing isn't really something that's an option for you to be reading.
Me too.
So Harry gets Unfogging the Future, and then he says he needs the Intermediate Transfiguration in the Standard Book of Spells, Grade 3.
Is the Standard Book of Spells, Grade 3, just, like, for charms, or...?
Yeah, we've talked about this before, and I think we kind of agreed charms was the main one, but it was kind of... maybe applied to every class a little bit.
Yeah, maybe they bring it to a lot of different classes.
Yeah, maybe like
a dictionary, you know?
Right, exactly.
Like a reference book.
Exactly. But I think, because he doesn't really ever have that many charms textbooks, so...
No, it doesn't seem like it. But Professor Flitwick also seems like the type who would just, like, not use a textbook.
Oh, totally, yeah.
He would go off script.
Totally. And I mean, I feel like he wouldn't need the textbook because he'd be that good of a teacher, I think.
Yeah, well, he's the type that wouldn't want one.
Right. So then, after Harry's gotten his books, he goes back to his room at the Leaky Cauldron, and he's like, what does he say?
Oh, he goes, it can't have been a death omen. I was panicking when I saw that thing in Magnolia Crescent. It was probably just a stray dog. And that's where it reminds me of me, like, this rationalization.
Well, I don't think that would be me talking to you.
No, I would think that to myself, but I wouldn't actually
You wouldn't
myself.
Believe it.
Exactly.
You'd be like... it could have been a stray dog, but it wasn't. It was the death omen.
Yeah.
And so then the mirror speaks back to Harry.
Yeah, it's kind of a running gag in this chapter that the mirror keeps on, like, giving little sassy comments to Harry.
It says, you're fighting a losing battle there, dear. In a wheezy voice. That's why I said it in that voice. In case people weirded out.
Because Harry's trying to comb his hair, and that's what the mirror deems to be a losing battle.
Oh, okay, so he could be either talking about Harry's hair or the actual omen, like, because Harry's talking about the death omen.
Yeah, but I always interpreted it, I mean, I guess it is for either, but it says Harry raised his hand automatically and tried to make his hair lie flat. You're fighting a losing battle there, dear.
I never even realized that could be applying to his hair. I always thought it was about him trying to rationalize the Grim.
Yeah, it's kind of to both, I guess.
Yeah, so... then we have a chapter break, a couple more days go by, and this is one of my favorite quotes in this chapter is after Harry's seen both Seamus and Dean, and then also Neville, it says that he's talking about Neville's grandma, who's, like, pretty intimidating, and it says, Harry hoped Neville's grandmother never found out that he'd pretended to be Neville while on the run from the Ministry of Magic.
Yeah, it's kind of foreshadowing, because... it talks about how she's formidable looking, mm-hmm. and then later on, Neville's gonna have the image of her when he's going up against the Boggart.
Right. So it's good we get a little bit of her.
It doesn't just come out of nowhere.
Right. But I also think it's just funny, you know, Harry still thinking about how he was on the run from the Ministry of Magic when really, like, they were just chasing him down to, like, protect him.
Yeah, they were trying to keep him safe.
Yeah. So then finally we meet up with Ron and Hermione, and it's about time. We're on page 55 of the book, so...
yeah, and you'd think that they would have tried to get there sooner, considering Mr. Weasley, like, knew that Harry was in Diagon Alley.
Right. Well, and couldn't Harry have sent Hedwig to Ron to tell him where he was?
Yeah, I mean, so, because when Harry runs into them, he's like, well, how did you know I was staying at the Leaky Cauldron? And Ron goes, Dad, said Ron simply.
I always imagine it, Dad.
I know. I just don't like the way that that's worded.
Me neither. I've always had a problem with the dad, said Ron simply. But I'm sure we're like the only people in the world who've ever had a problem.
The thing is, it doesn't really, it's not really that simple. Like, yeah, his dad works at the Ministry of Magic, but like, it doesn't really seem quite right to me that everyone at the Ministry of Magic knows the inside scoop on what's going on with Harry.
That's the thing, is, like, they do, probably, because of this whole Sirius Black thing, which is a little bit, like, I don't think everybody should know. But also, it's weird that Ron and Harry just assume that everybody at the Ministry does.
Well, it just seems like, shouldn't there be a little bit of privacy for Harry's situation?
Yeah, like, you'd think.
That, you know, this is kind of seems like a confidential situation. Like, Harry ran away, that type of thing. Like, mm-hmm. should be kept a little bit quiet.
Yeah. Well, and also, it's a little bit weird how Harry's like, how did you know I was here? And so, I mean, like, good. He should be happy that his friends are there, first of all. He shouldn't just be questioning it. I guess he is happy, but I think it's funny because he's, like, Ron and Hermione obviously have to come to Diagon Alley, too, to do mm-hmm. shopping. It's not like they're just there to see Harry.
Yeah, well, I think he's mostly surprised because they said that they went to the Leaky Cauldron right. already to look for him.
Right.
But, yeah, and then Hermione, like, obviously Ron has filled in Hermione because she says, did you really blow up your aunt, Harry? Very seriously. And then Harry and Ron sort of laugh about
Ron's
it.
Ron's, like, cracking up.
And then she says she's amazed Harry wasn't expelled, and Harry said he thought, like, maybe he would have been arrested. We're like, Harry, get over it. You're like, not really an outlaw, like you think. Like, yeah, you
he totally
you broke a rule. You didn't exactly, I mean, it was a law, I guess, but it's, I don't know.
No, I mean,
it's like, I don't know.
I'm trying to think of an equivalent crime in the Muggle world.
Maybe like smoking a cigarette underage.
Yeah, something.
Like, you're not going to go to prison for that.
I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, like a DUI, maybe.
That seems, like, more intense. Way more intense.
I don't know, but
maybe drinking underage, but I feel like it's more equivalent with smoking a cigarette underage.
Yeah, it's really pretty minor.
Yeah.
I mean, not that you should do that, but but, yeah, I think it's good to be reunited with Ron and Hermione here. Ron finally has a new wand. Glad that the Weasleys saved a little bit of the money from the galleon draw to get a new wand.
Instead of just blowing it all on Egypt.
Yeah. And then we get a little bit of foreshadowing to the rest of this book because Hermione has a really heavy bag filled with all her school books.
Right. And she's like, well, I'm taking a lot more subjects than you are, aren't I? And then she starts listing off all the subjects. Arithmancy, care of magical creatures, divination, study of ancient runes, muggle studies. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're all like, why are you taking muggle studies? Because it doesn't really make sense. But Hermione reminds them that it's almost her birthday, so she has some money to go get a birthday present for herself. I think it's funny how her parents always just drop her off. And like, I mean, I guess they've gone shopping with her once, but they gave her some money.
I think she's probably more efficient without them there.
Well, probably, but also, like, you'd think that they'd want to spend as much time with her they can before she takes off.
Yeah.
She's not going to come home for, like, any holidays because Harry is going to be at the school, too. But, yeah, so she has 10 galleons left to buy herself an owl. She's thinking.
That's actually, like, surprisingly cheap.
I know. I was thinking that, too. I'm, like, I think, like, barn owls on Pottermore are about that expensive. I'm pretty sure snowy owls are 15, 14, 16, something like that.
Okay.
Because snowy owls are the really high-end owls.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, but it just seems like kind of, it's not that expensive to buy yourself an owl, I guess. But, I mean, that is a bird. It's not like, you know.
It's pretty cheap for a cat, too.
Yeah, how much does Crookshanks end up being?
Well, I don't think we see her pay for it, so, for him. Excuse me, I just called Crookshanks an it. That's a horrible crime.
It is.
I might get arrested and sent to Azkaban. So they go into the magical menagerie, because Hermione wants to buy an owl, and also Ron wants to take care of Scabbers, who's been looking a bit off color since their trip to Egypt. I wonder why.
I know, so we actually get a lot of foreshadowing about Scabbers in this chapter. But the magical menagerie is kind of funny to me. It goes through all the different kind of magical pets that they have there. And it kind of reminds me of when we go in the Fantastic Beasts, when they go into Newt's suitcase and see all the different animals.
Totally.
But here, I mean, they're mostly more like domestic type animals. But What kind of pet would you choose from the magical world, Martha?
I would not pick a double-ended newt, that's for sure. Unless it was Newt Scamander. Because I looked it up, a double-ended newt is, it's like a newt with no tail. Instead of a tail, it's just another head. So,
yeah.
So it's like two newts pushed together. But, I mean, if it was Newt Scamander, I'd be down.
Yeah, we all know you're really into him.
Who isn't?
Yeah, but...
You, apparently.
Well, this reminds me that I know that Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, has been previously released as a book written by Newt Scamander. Came out, like, in the early 2000s. But I know that they're re-releasing it, and it's going to be updated. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, with a foreword from Newt Scamander, right?
Well, the old one has a foreword from him.
Oh.
But it's going to have updated so that it's going to be more up-to-date with more creatures that were in the movie, that type of thing. Because I guess the movie didn't completely stick to just the creatures that were in that book. So it's going to be updated. Cool. So when that comes out, we'll have to think about doing a reaction show.
Yeah, definitely. And you did give me the screenplay of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I
haven't cracked into that bad boy
but
yet.
But I've looked at it a little bit, and it does have some like annotations and stuff from J.K. Rowling, so it'll be pretty interesting to read, I think.
Yeah, well, okay, needless to say, I know... This isn't going to come as a surprise to anyone, but if I was going to pick one of these pets for myself, I would definitely pick a Neasel, which is what Crookshanks is.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I mean, it's pretty much a type of cat, but yeah. It has special powers. It's able to kind of see more suspicious people and that type of thing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I thought you'd want to pick just a regular cat.
Well, I mean, why not get a magical cat?
I guess if you need it to be special.
Yeah, I do.
Because
if you're in a magical creature shop.
Yeah, that's true. Kind of like how Scabbers is a rat with no actual powers.
Yeah, because it says that he's a common garden rat. He's not expected to live more than 3 years, but...
Brahms had him for, like, 2 years, and Percy had him for at least 3 years beforehand, so...
Right. But the thing is that Scabbers... No, clearly isn't just a rat, but...
As Crookshanks can tell.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of funny how Ron is, like, kind of defensive of Scabbers. He's like, well, the lady is a little bit, like, rude about Scabbers. She's like, he's been through the mill, this one. And Ron's like,
I know. I like how he comes into the shop, he says to the lady, like, oh, my rat's been a bit off color since I brought him back from Egypt. And the lady says... The witch says, bang him on the counter.
Yeah, that's a really weird expression.
And then Ron just takes Scabbers out of his pocket and places him onto the counter. He doesn't bang him on the counter. I don't know if that's like
honestly
a British phrase.
It probably is. Like a banger in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, this is like a pretty realistic scene, I think, like the kind of employee that would work in a pet shop. No offense to any pet shop employee listeners we may have out there, but I feel like anytime I've gone to a pet shop, they're like not necessarily the most personable of people.
They enjoy the animals.
Right, exactly. So I'm sure like they really do care for the animals they're caring for, but they're not necessarily that excited to associate with the animals' owners. So like this lady's being kind of like a little bit brief with Ron, and Ron's a little bit offended by the way she's talking about him.
The witch is being kind of rude about Scabbers. She's like, what powers does he have? And Ron's like, not much.
Yeah.
And the lady, he's been through the mill, this one.
I'm gonna start saying that about people. I can say that about you sometimes.
Thank you.
I like how Ron's like kind of offended because the lady's suggesting that he could get a new rat.
Yeah, she points to the cage of black rats and says, like, you could get one of these, and they start skipping.
Yes.
Ron mutters, show off.
Yeah. And so then the witch gives him some rat tonic.
It's kind of silly because really Scabbers should be able to do a lot more since he's a human. But it is Wormtail, so.
Yeah, exactly. His special powers are the ability to nurse Lord Voldemort back to health. And milk Nagini.
Yeah, ew.
So then Crookshanks comes flying out of nowhere.
Right, and this is before Hermione buys Crookshanks.
Right. Crookshanks is an interesting name. Are you a big fan of that?
No, I've never been a huge fan of the name.
Yeah,
it seems like a really cute cat to me.
Yeah, well, and you have a Crookshanks stuffed animal that I'm looking at right now.
I do. I have the Crookshanks stuffed animal that I got as a Secret Santa gift for Christmas this year. And it's really cute. It looks just like Crookshanks in the movie, fluffy and orange.
Yeah.
But I've always thought that Crookshanks is really cute. Kind of funny because he kind of has that squashy face.
Yeah, which is really cute, I think. I'm not a huge fan of the name, but it grows out of you, I think.
I don't know why she had to name him that. I feel like Hermione doesn't seem true to character. Like, well, I feel like Hermione would pick, like, a reference to, like, a famous witch or wizard.
Yeah, I think so, too. But Hermione didn't name Crookshanks. It was named that in the shop. So I guess Hermione didn't want to change his name.
Well, you'd think Hermione would rename Crookshanks.
Yeah, but I think it's kind of maybe her more humanitarian side, or I guess, I don't know, animatarian or something, because she says that Crookshanks has been in the shop for a really long time.
Yeah, poor
so
guy.
That's been his name for already a good portion of his life. It's not like when you get a kitten, you can rename the kitten. So I can understand why she wouldn't want to change his name.
Yeah, well, and especially because he's like a really smart cat. I mean, he's in part Measle.
Yeah. So then Crookshanks obviously recognizes Scabbers for what he is immediately, and so that's why he attacks Ron and Scabbers. It's funny because Ron and Harry, like, get out of there, and Ron asks, "What was that?" Harry says, "It was either a very big cat or quite a small tiger." Good one, Harry. He's clearly been without friends for a while because his sense of humor is really not as sharp-edged as it might be with the company of others.
And Hermione then also brings Ron his rat tonic.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of like a running gag throughout this chapter as well, that Ron keeps misplacing the rat tonic.
Yeah.
It's just funny to think about him feeding this tonic to Scabbers, yeah, who's not actually a rat.
Yeah, it's really weird. Real weird. I'm not a huge fan of all these running gags in this chapter, which we have already pointed out, too.
I don't know, the rat tonic kind of, like, I kind of like it, though, because I can really relate to, like, just that one thing that you keep misplacing.
Totally, yeah,
especially when you're, like, on vacation, mm-hmm, and, yeah, you don't, yeah, so I can just, I think that that's pretty realistic.
That makes sense. So then Hermione ends up buying Crookshanks with her birthday money, and Ron is, like, really mad. He's like, "Scabbers needs rest and relaxation."
Oh, Ron, give him up.
Weird how Ron cares so much about, I mean, it's nice, I guess. It's weird how much he cares about Scabbers.
Yeah, well, Martha, that's his pet.
So, do you think Ron is, like, a little bit traumatized after he finds out that Scabbers was, like, lying to him the whole time he had him as a pet?
Well, you'd think. I mean, this is another case of, like, maybe Ron needs to go to the school psychologist.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe some art therapy would be really good for Ron. I mean, just, like, losing your pet is hard, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing he has going for him is that Scabbers is misplaced for a while, so he sort
That's
of, like,
true.
Comes to terms with, like, the loss.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he shows up again, it's... And then the whole big reveal happens, so it's not like it just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's true. So Hermione's, like, talking about why she wanted to buy Crookshanks, and she's like, that poor thing's been in the shop for a really long time. Nobody wanted him. And Ron's like, "Wonder why."
Yeah, rude. I mean, that's a way better pet than Scabbers.
Yeah, seriously.
And it's a way better pet than Wormtail.
True. So then they go in, or they're reunited with the rest of the Weasley family. First, Mr. Weasley, who's, like, super exhausted because he's been working at the Ministry during all the Sirius Black stuff. Ron is like, "I wonder if we could catch Black. It'd be good to get some more money."
Ron's gotten a taste of gold, and he's not going back.
Right. Now that he has his wand and he's been traveling, he knows what it's like
to
live the high life.
Exactly. He's been living high and carefree.
Yeah. Mr. Weasley, that does not please him at all.
No, he's, like, so annoyed. Plus, I'm sure, like, just what Mr. Weasley has, like, the additional information that Black is after Harry.
Right, so he's, like, already super stressed about that.
Well, and he's probably just like, "Don't get that in your head, boys."
Yeah. So then we see the rest of the family. Ginny's, like, super embarrassed, of course, that she'd always been very taken with Harry.
Right, and so I kind of forgot that this persists. longer than the second book, because we kind of had our theory last book that Ginny acts weird mostly because of Tom Riddle.
Uh-huh.
But definitely that was part of her personality for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I know that later, it comes out in the sixth book that Hermione tells Ginny that she should just start talking to Harry like a friend.
Right.
And kind of look at other boys instead.
Right.
So I knew that it did continue in this way, but, like, Ginny is still acting kind of like her, like, timid and weird self.
Well, yeah, and then also, I mean, she explains it, J.K. Rowling explains it pretty well by saying, like, she's embarrassed that Harry had saved her life just a few months prior.
Which I can understand.
I mean, yeah, that's gonna be kind of an awkward situation.
I mean, Harry saw her at a pretty vulnerable point.
Right, exactly, so that's a pretty awkward situation for both parties, especially Ginny. And then I love this scene with Percy. This is probably one of my favorite Fred George Percy moments.
Yeah, I love it too.
Percy comes in and he's like, I hope you're well, to Harry.
I think kind of in my head, like, because it says that Harry said it was rather like being introduced to the mayor.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of makes me think, like, maybe Percy in his head is, like, practicing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how would I talk to, like, how will I network with peers?
Yeah, I think that's totally what this is.
Yeah.
That's just the way he acts, but it's also, he's definitely prepping for his future as a politician. And then Fred comes, like, jumping in, and he's like, Harry, simply splendid to see you, old boy. and my favorite is when Mrs. Weasley is like, that's enough. And then Fred goes, Mum, how really corking to see you. Yeah. I love the word corking. It's really great.
Right. And then Mrs. Weasley's like, I bet you've heard, Harry, that we have the second head boy in the family, pointing at Percy. And then Fred goes, and the last. And then Mrs. Weasley, I don't doubt that, frowning. I notice they haven't made you two prefects. And then Fred and George are like, why on earth would we want to be prefects? That would take all the fun out of life.
Yeah. it's pretty funny. It's just, like, classic Weasley stuff.
Yeah.
I usually like the banter within the Weasley family.
Yeah.
At the chapter breaks again after George tells Harry that they tried to shut Percy in a pyramid, but then Mum spotted them. But we've mentioned that they're saying Mum a couple times. Clearly they've stopped changing it for the Americans, and so they're saying Mum instead of Mom, which I'm very pleased and corking feeling about.
You're corked to find that out.
Yeah. Aren't you?
It was hard for me to understand.
Yeah, I mean,
it was tough because I thought M-U-M?
You thought it was a typo, probably.
At first, is that a typo? And then I read it again. I thought, well, what could that mean based on who they're talking to? I'm really not sure. And then I read, oh, is it supposed to mean mom? And then by the, like, about the fifth time it said it, I thought, well, maybe that's how they say it in England.
Well, you did the right thing by persisting.
I know. I used context clues to help me
with
that.
We Americans are smarter than you may think. If Alice could figure it out, then so could you. Then we have this chapter break, and this is probably the most exciting part of this chapter, not right away, but this evening this event takes place is definitely the most exciting part of the chapter, don't you think, Alice?
Yeah, definitely, because it's another setup for the, like, future book. I mean, I guess, like, the later events of the book.
Yeah, the first thing that happens is they're at this dinner, it's the night before they're gonna go to King's Cross, and, Mr. Weasley mentions that the ministry is providing cars for everybody to go to King's Cross the next day, and both Percy and Ron are kind of weirded out by that. They're like, why is the ministry giving us cars? And Mr. Weasley's like, well, it's because I don't have my car anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm an employee of the ministry.
If only the ministry would just truly be that nice without any strings attached,
right,
to Mr. Weasley.
Yeah. But, like, he's not being a very good liar here, because Harry is, like, notices that he's not really meeting their eyes when he talks about it. So that's the first, like, hint that something's up.
Yeah, and it's kind of, like, in accordance with the same way that Fudge was acting with Harry, so Harry can kind of just feel like something's up in general.
Well, people lie to Harry all the time, and oftentimes they do not do a good job.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting, because I feel like that's true about a lot of adults when they interact with kids.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, as a kid, you can see through it, and a lot of kids can see through it.
Definitely.
So, you can relate with Harry in this scene, I think.
Mm-hmm. So then dinner's over. They have a 5-course dinner. They're really living, large with the 700
galleons. It's probably the last, I don't know, 30 galleons or something.
Yeah, totally. So then dinner's over, and they're, like, packing up their suitcases, getting ready to leave. Then Percy notices that his head boy badge is gone, and Ron notices that his rat tonic is missing once again. So they're both,
Ron says he thinks he might have left it in the bar. Why would you take it to the bar with you, Ron? Maybe leave that in your motel room.
Yeah. So Harry's like, oh, I'll go get it for you. So he goes to go find the rat tonic, but then he overhears this conversation with Mr. and Mrs. Weasley, which is definitely the highlight of this chapter.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward because it starts off and you think that Mr. and Mrs. Weasley are, like, having some sort of marital squabble.
Right.
Like, oh, why do Mum and Dad have to fight?
Yeah, exactly. Because he hears their voices and they're just yelling at each other, and then he's about to, like, leave, but then he hears his own name, so that's when he stops. Which I definitely can relate to this, not with, like, hearing our parents or something, but...
but, like, you hear your name and then all of a sudden you can't stop listening?
Right, that's called the cocktail party effect, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I think isn't that when you're just, like, overhear a conversation and you don't hear anything and then you hear your name?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like that's kind of what this is.
A little bit. I just wanted to bring that in. Feel smart. But, Harry hears his name, and it's because Mr. and Mrs. Weasley are in a little squabble about whether or not to tell Harry.
Yeah, and it's a really dramatic reveal, because it starts out, and it's still really vague. They're saying, like, Mr. Weasley's saying, Harry has a right to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. He's not a child. And then Mrs. Weasley... Arthur, the truth would terrify him. It's great, because it just keeps you glued to the page. You really want to know, like, what they're talking about.
Yeah, totally. And Mrs. Weasley, this is foreshadowing not only to the rest of this book, but it's definitely indicative of her character. That's going to be a ongoing characteristic of Mrs. Weasley throughout the series.
A, like, need to shelter the children.
Yeah, and especially Harry. I mean, this really brings to mind the confrontation with Sirius at the beginning of the 5th book, when Harry wants to learn all the things that the Order of the Phoenix is doing, and Mrs. Weasley thinks that that's...
too much for Harry.
Right, exactly.
Well, she thinks he's so sensitive, and he's been through so much, and
yeah, I mean,
she wants to try to protect his innocence.
Yeah, I mean, she's just looking out for his best interests, but I think... most of the time the reader is on the other person's side in this kind of argument, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, at least when I was a child, for sure, I was always on Harry's side. Like, come on, Mrs. Weasley.
Right.
But, I mean, now I can understand it more as an adult. I mean, Harry's only 13.
Right. I mean, 13 is young.
It's a pretty big piece of information to get that there's a murderer on the loose who's, like, possibly broken out of prison specifically to kill you.
Yeah. I mean, that's terrifying. I'm pretty sure when I read this the first time, I, like, dropped the book or something, because I was so scared. So she says, we have, like, leading up to the point where they reveal that Black escaped Azkaban to kill Harry. They said he's been mumbling in his sleep, he's at Hogwarts.
Right, which is great. I love it, because it's, again, one of these red herrings that could mean, I mean, it sounds, given what we know, it sounds like he's talking about Harry.
Right.
But he's clearly, in the end, we're going to figure out he's actually talking about Scabbers or Wormtail.
Right.
Because he's seen the Daily Prophet.
Right, and the picture with Ron, so he knows that he's with a Hogwarts student. So yeah, I like how mysterious this is. Like, it's not clear at all who he's talking about. But then finally they reveal that, and Harry's just, like, listening. Mrs. Weasley's being a little bit, like... there's a little bit of inconsistencies in this chapter, I think, going what we know now about, like, the Weasleys' work with the Order of the Phoenix. The way that they're talking about specific people is a little bit strange. So, first of all, Sirius was in the Order of the Phoenix the first go-around. Mm-hmm. And they assumed that he was a traitor. So, Mr. and Mrs. Weasley worked with Sirius for a little while.
Well, I don't think so, because I don't think that the Weasleys were in the original Order of the Phoenix. I think they joined in the second war.
Oh, okay. Maybe you're right.
I don't think that they were, like, you know, clearly they were not Death Eaters, but I kind of feel like they were just average citizens in the first war, and then I think they get so involved because of their connection with Harry.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually, because I think
I remember
in
that picture, I'm pretty sure that Mr. and Mrs. Weasley are not in it.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm remembering this
but
now.
But it is kind of weird when you think about that they're going to... I feel like this is maybe this... like, this book is sort of an impetus for why they end up joining the Order of the Phoenix, because they're, like, talking about Harry, trying to keep him safe, that type of thing, and I feel like they're getting closer to these situations, maybe it's affecting them more personally now, and so it's going to be motivation to join.
Yeah. The one thing that I thought was a little bit weird is the way that Molly talks about Albus Dumbledore. I mean, like, he was their headmaster, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason that we're mentioning him the way that they do is because the reader hasn't heard about Dumbledore yet. She goes, "You're forgetting Albus Dumbledore. I don't think anything could happen to Harry at Hogwarts while Dumbledore's headmaster."
Yeah.
I suppose he knows all about this. Like, obviously Dumbledore
knows all about this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's there for the reader, I think, to kind of try to, you know, answer the reader's questions.
Definitely, yeah.
Or speak for the reader.
Mm-hmm. But still, it's a little bit... I get a little frustrated when they talk like that, but oh well. So then they're like, Dumbledore isn't fond of the Azkaban guards. More mentions of the Azkaban guards, which are leading up to the next chapter, which is the Dementor.
Yeah, and you know, here's a quote that makes me believe, like, this is sort of in the evolution of the Weasleys' involvement with the fight against Voldemort. This shows you that they're kind of in the early stages, because Mr. Weasley says, "When you're dealing with a wizard like Black, you sometimes have to join forces with those you'd rather avoid."
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a lesson that they learn later on, that's like, no, you actually don't have to join forces with evil people.
Yeah.
You can, or like, evil creatures, like, you don't fight fire with fire.
Right, but I mean, it is true that, I mean, the Weasleys have to work with people in the order that they don't really like Mundungus and even Sirius.
Right, but I think, like, that's different than the Dementors.
Totally, yeah.
And I just think, like, that shows you a moral complexity that, like, they're going to encounter later on, and maybe, I don't think that they would be saying that in a couple of books.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that, but I like that reading of it. So then, Harry's just standing there, and his friend George, like, butt in. It's really an opportune time for them to come in, but...
And it's one of those moments where, like, Harry has just gotten this sort of sucker punch.
Yeah.
Information, like, where he's just, like... I mean, I'm sure that's all he can think about. And then here comes Fred and George, and they're, like, trying to be all jokester with him. Like, they have no idea that Harry has just, like, found out this really bad information. And, like, I can relate to that, like, where you're maybe at work or at school or something, and you get, like, a piece of bad news,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to act normal to other people, but you can't really concentrate.
Yeah, you're just kind of, like,
Yeah, and, like, faking.
Yeah, which Harry just, like, it says he, like, forced out a smile, but...
Yeah, because Fred and George show him the prefect badge, which they had stolen.
Head boy badge.
And it... Oh, yeah, the head boy badge. And now, instead of saying head boy, it says big head boy.
It's a good one.
Which, like, is actually really funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious. But Harry's, like, can't really, like, laugh at that right now. He's got other things on his mind. He goes back to his room in the Leaky Cauldron, and he starts doing this, like, introspection session.
Yeah.
And then I think it's interesting the things that he's focusing on, because he's not really that scared about Black.
No, and I don't know. It plays into who Harry is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's something about danger to himself, he's never really that worried.
Exactly.
He worries more about danger to other people. Like, so he's probably, like, glad that Black broke out to kill him.
And not Ron or Hermione or somebody else that he knows. I was gonna say, if he thought it was somebody else that Black was coming to kill, then he'd be a lot more freaked out. But he's like, the thing that bothered him most was the fact that his chances of visiting Hogsmeade now look like zero. Okay, Harry, calm down about Hogsmeade.
He's obsessed with Hogsmeade.
He really is. It's like, that's not that cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's just the independence factor, but... Yeah, and so then he's...
Harry, you just had a week to yourself in Diagon Alley. Like, that should suffice for the next year of Hogsmeade trips, which will... There's, like, four of them.
Yeah. I guess it's, like, a taste of independence that he gets here, and then he knows he's not going to get that again.
Yeah.
But he's being a little bit, maybe, blind about the danger of Black.
I think so. And, I mean, I think this is showing his maturity level. Like, in one sense, he's pretty mature because he isn't too worried about it and, like, isn't freaking out. But then at the same sense, it's kind of, like, maybe if he had a little more perspective, he really should be a little bit more concerned.
Right. He's like, did they think he couldn't look after himself? He'd escaped Lord Voldemort 3 times. He wasn't completely useless.
He could do math and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. So he's kind of talking out loud. He's like, I'm not going to be murdered. And then his mirror, once again, the running gag, speaks back to him and says, that's the spirit.
Dear.
Oh, yeah. That, or I have to do it in the wheezy voice. Yeah.
That's the spirit, dear.
That wasn't very wheezy.
It's the spirit, dear.
Very good.
So that's the end of the chapter. I hadn't really been thinking about who the real weirdo should be until now.
I'm gonna say maybe it should go to, like, Fred or George. They're pretty funny.
Yeah, I was thinking the mirror, but...
Ugh, the mirror only said, like, 2 lines.
What about Florian Fortescue?
Well, he wasn't in it very much. Yeah. He's not even mentioned enough to be in the top 200
characters. Well, he's never gonna get another real weirdo option.
That's true, but I don't know if he did enough for it.
What about the manager of Flourish and Blocks?
If we knew his name.
Yeah, I think Florian Fortescue should get it.
You don't think Fred and George deserve it for their funny pranks?
Yeah, okay, so they do Big Head Boy, and they also, like, imitate
mocked Percy.
Yeah. Okay, well, can like we give it to them as a package deal?
I think so. They're pretty much inseparable.
Okay, let's give it to them.
Until the final days.
Stop.
R.I.P.
Okay. Well, let's give it to Fred and George then, since you don't want to give it to...
The mirror.
No, I don't want to give it to the mirror.
I feel like I liked the mirror better until we started talking about
until
this.
Until I did the impression of it. How about the chapter ranking? I like the chapter.
I'd say I'd put it in third.
Honestly,
right,
me too, yeah.
Like, I still think it's better than chapter one.
I think so too, but I'd say, so we have Aunt Marge's Big Mistake at number one. That's definitely the best so far that we've had. And then we'll do the Night Bus and then this.
I think so.
I agree. That's exactly what I was going to say. You can find those lists at our website, www.realweirdsisters.com. Both the chapter rankings list and Real Weirdos list are on there. And you can also comment on the episodes there if you'd like. But the number one thing we'd like you to do, if you haven't already, subscribe, rate, and review in iTunes. This is a review from a few weeks ago that we haven't had a chance to read yet, because we haven't gotten too many new ones in the new year, unfortunately. But this review is titled Really Fun. It's from Hufflepuff1113. They said, just when you think you run out of Harry Potter stuff to read, watch, listen to, you find something new. I've been listening since basically the beginning, and I love this podcast. Even though I don't always agree with Martha and Alice, I still enjoy the analysis and commentary on Harry Potter. It's rekindled my love for the series and made me start rereading the books again. So that's an awesome review. I like, for one thing, that this person put my name before your name, Alice. That very rarely happens.
Well, it's alphabetical order and age order.
Well, not for this person,
I
clearly.
Know. So clearly you have an admirer.
Aha, yes. Hufflepuff1113. And I also really appreciate that this person started rereading the books with us.
Yeah, that's cool. And I also like, we've had other people say this as well, but I like that this person still gives us 5 stars even though they don't always agree with us. Like, that's great because we like hearing other people's perspectives.
Yeah,
of course. It's fun for us.
Definitely. So if you want to join the conversation a little bit more, you can definitely join our Facebook page, facebook.com/realweirdsisters. Follow us on Twitter @realweirdsister. We'd love to talk about things you may disagree with us about, things you may agree with us. Last week we had a couple listeners say that they'd be interested in the Cat Names podcast, which we mentioned in the last episode. So maybe that's something that will be in the works.
That would be fun for me.
Yeah, it would be fun for me. I don't know about the rest of our listeners, though.
The couple that reached out to us would have fun with it.
Yeah, exactly. But thanks so much for listening today. Next week we'll be back to talk about The Dementor, and I'm really excited because Remus Lupin will be in this chapter. Not too much, but we'll have a lot to talk about, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I think that chapter, it's really going to pick up.
Definitely. And then after that, we're just going to be into the... getting more and more into the meat of the book, which I'm really excited about.
Me too.
But until then, we're the Real Weird Sisters.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the Real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the Real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.